Welcome to my Caucasian home.
Oh my God.
Talented audience. Show stopping.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Spectacular.
My name is Ekaterina Petrovna Zamochkova.
Yeah, big gay out.
But you can call me Katya.
Diverse representations of trans people in the media, I think, are so important.
I guess I just look different.
Sing it!
I am proud to be gay.
Sing the fucking song!
Well, all right. If you insist, I'll sing my song.
Yeah.
Song.
No one stops me.
Gay Panic with Jack and Jake.
My machine. Oh, what's mine? I drifted, shaped and shaped.
Bippity boppity booby, it is your Friday nighty. Welcome to Gay Panic here on 2SCR 107.3. My name is Jake.
I'm Jack, and I was wondering how long you were going to carry on the IE at the end of every word. I thought it was going to go to Gay Panicky, and I'm Jakey,
and I'm me just doing me what I think I should.
Someone tunes in though randomly, it would not be very fun. I think it would be confusing.
Not for you. Like, I think I'd be having a good time though. Like, it's not all about you. Sometimes I'm just thinking in advance of what the people would think, and I think we have a collective understanding of what we all want here, so that's what we're doing here, and we're just going to keep doing it like that.
It sounds really clear. Clear as mud, definitely.
Oh, I love mud. But yeah, we talk about everything sex, sexuality, and gender diverse here for the next hour on your Friday Eve. What's been going on? Like, what's the new jams? Like, Mom, can you go fix your hair, please? Okay, sorry. Oh, I got love like, you girls, you keep me so young, I love you so much.
Anyway, there's been a lot that's happened in the gay world. I just want to give a shout out to Will and Grace because it's my favorite TV series of all time.
Holy crap, I totally forgot.
Yeah, how dare you? What kind of gay man are you? It's hideous. It's disgusting. You disgust me. Get out of the studio.
Wow, okay, goodbye. Will and Grace, sitcom from 98 to 2006. Yes, I know, I have all of them on box set. Very famous sitcom has announced some sort of return. I don't know exactly in what form it is coming. Is it coming in like a 10-episode season box?
Yeah, I want it to be a little series that they're creating and not just like one of those telly movies that they do. Because quite frankly, that's not enough for me. I need more than 1 hour of Will and Grace.
Yep.
And I need it to be the Jack and Karen show. I need them to rename it and to obviously focus on the main characters because they are. So.
But the thing is, I don't want it to come back in the way that Gilmore Girls came back. And preface, like, I watched Gilmore Girls here and there, but when I was younger, I also like had a livid hate for it just because they spoke so fast and I was like not the brightest child. But I don't want them to come back with 4 episodes that go for like 1 hour and 40 minutes each. Like, that was heinous.
Is that how Gilmore Girls?
That's how they came back. I'm like, absolutely not.
No way.
So I would much prefer Will and Grace to come back. They came back in with style as well. Like, you know, if you watch the show, they all have musical talents in some regard. And they did kind of this blend of, you know, acting, Will and Grace antics interplayed with like musical, like stylings, all that sort of stuff. So I hope they keep to the format, though, of the show, which was like 20-minute episodes, 20 to 22 minutes, really sharp, really quick, really funny. And I hope they keep it in that vein, because if they do, it's a very warm welcome back for those guys.
Absolutely. And continue on the seasons. Not just one, make 20. I would be totally happy with that.
800 episodes a week.
It'll be interesting to see if they try and keep the same dynamic, though, like having Jack as this young, youthful floozy, basically, of a gay man, and having Will as trying to be this serious older character, or if they're going to adopt their ages as they are. I just want Karen to stay the same, forever immortalized. And I think they were
hinting she will be
to
like
that as well, that she had just been asleep for the past 10 years or 11 years, however long it is between drinks.
In, like, cryogenic stasis. I think that because if you flash back to and have watched the series and are familiar with the finale as well, they kind of do a little bit of a glimpse into the future after Will and Grace kind of have a fallout, and then they go into when their kids are in college and then they rekindle and where exactly they will pick up from that. Perhaps they'll do before that point. We don't know. But also the funny thing you mentioned about Karen is they all look somewhat aged when they're doing that into the future thing. But Karen looks the exact same. And probably by that point, given her character's age, she's like 70, but she just still looks so on point. And in this trailer as well, for whatever this new season will be, she still looks stunning. I love Megan Mullally.
Yeah, I just don't like the last name. It confuses me.
Mullally
plays on my anxiety around my lisp.
Right.
Which I'm working on.
You don't have a lisp.
I don't have a lisp now, but I feel like I did.
Whenever I say that name, it just reemerges. Like constant battle throughout. Like, were you in? No, you would have been in primary school when it came out.
Yeah, I would have been in primary school. I think. No,
and everyone was making fun of you because you were the kid that couldn't pronounce Megan Mullally, who was actually playing Karen Walker, and everyone's like, "Oh my god, he can't say it. That's so bad. He has a lisp."
No one in my like rural town of Bensdale was watching Will and Grace.
There it is.
It's coming back. Oh no! Someone who could help me with that though is potentially Andrew Popel, who is a speech pathologist in his everyday life, but in his 2SER life, he hosts a wonderful program on Saturday mornings, Final Draft, where he investigates books, novels, and all sorts of texts. And he's done a really beautiful interview for us with Nevo Zizin, who's just released a book, Finding Nevo, and it's a really interesting memoir, basically about their life and how they came to understand that they were a non-gender binary trans man, and use the pronouns them, their, they. So if you're wondering, that's the pronouns that we'll be using throughout this the interview and then thereafter talk. But it's a really interesting conversation and something I think that we do get a chance to talk about on Gay Panic every now and then, but not something that we get to learn so much about firsthand.
Yeah, and it's also, I guess, to blend into that too, his Jewish heritage and kind of the juggling between what his gender identity is and then also what his religion is, or I guess just his background. So yeah, thanks to Andrew Popel, you'll be hearing from that coming up very shortly in the program. And as we have been doing for the past like 2 months or so, each week we've been recapping the episode that is most recently out of RuPaul's Drag Race. It's episode 8 this week. 8, that's like one a week. That's 2 months. Mathematical.
I thought you were just trying to figure out what number that was. That's two more than six.
Yeah, that's 8. Like, if I put that on my fingers and I go, there's 8 of them, then I have 8 fingers.
And I only have 2 that are not left. That's crazy.
I have the thumbs. Thummies.
Removed.
Thummies. Removed the thummies.
But we are going to be looking into episode 8. It was a cracker. It was a good one.
Jats crackers. We saw that everyone, the Real Housewives of Sydney reunion was out as well. Is anyone watching that? Is anyone? It's so good.
I didn't watch the reunion. I only saw one bit of the reunion special, and it was, who's the older lady?
Victoria.
And Athena.
Yeah. Was this my Snapchat story?
It probably was.
Okay, so if you have watched the Housewives franchise, any of them, the Sydney one, if you have not yet got to it, it's trash, but it's fantastic trash. It's trash that's in the bin that you put your hand into the garbage to get it back out, and you go, why am I doing this?
I can absolutely just
enjoy that regardless.
Sympathize with that. I eat out of the bin on the regular, you know this, and that is something that I would definitely nibble on.
It's sustainable. It's sustainable reality television, although there's like 11 episodes since over now, but it's sustainable. You should watch that, but back to the point, RuCap, RuVision coming up very soon, season 9 of RuPaul's Drag Race. In the meantime, though, we're going to jump headfirst into some music and 45 minutes of yodeling coming your way. And we have our producer, Patrick, who is going to be yodeling for it. I'm sorry, no, I won't do that to you.
Let's jump into something that is a play on Tom Cruise. What's this? What's happening? Why? Why am I loving it?
So this is Com Trues, and he is kind of like a synth pop, dreamy, wavy, vaporwave producer who's been around for like 5-6 years now. He's got a new song. It's called Isostasy. It's giving me some sort of like, along in his entire discography as well, Tron vibes. It's got some cool synth poppy 80 flashback sort of things. Death drop, hands down, pants down for the gods.
This is Com Trues with Isostasy. You're on Gay Panic.
UTS is number one again, ranked as Australia's number one young university for the third year in a row. As a truly modern university, we never look back. By continually challenging conventions, we not only change the status quo, we improve it. Join us for a course info evening. To learn more, go online and search UTS Course Info Night. UTS, sponsors of 2SER 107.3.
On May 27, you may well have to change your plans if you don't want to miss the 2SER Bob Dylan Birthday Marathon. 2SER's celebration of all things Bob will go for 8 hours and feature news, reviews, interviews, the Bob Dylan quiz, and all the Bob songs that fit, starting at 8 p.m. and going through till 4 in the morning. The Bob Dylan Birthday Marathon on 2SER, May 27, from 8 p.m. 2SER 107.3. Stories, ideas, music, and Bob. It's a hard rain's
gonna fall. My son is gay and living in New York, darling. I'm going to New York tomorrow. I can see him.
He won't want to see you.
Of course he will, darling. Gay people love me. All my friends are gay. I mean, I laugh with them. I cry with them, darling. You know, Oklahoma, where the wind comes sweeping down the plain.
Gay Panic on 2SER, what all the gay boy mums listen to.
Funny, 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 funny!
getting so many things from that absolute delicious piece of Africana.
Yeah.
The Blaze with Territory and just really down tempo, chilled vibes, like Tropicana on a Saturday afternoon.
Oasis within kind of like the desert region, but you've got a little bit of, I guess, instrumentation to back it. It's just an interesting blend. It's something that I would listen to as I am doing things. It's something that I might listen to. I might put in the headphones and I might listen to that. I might also put it over a speaker. It's just some music that I was just currently enjoying.
It's beautiful stuff on Gay Panic on 2SER 107.3. Such epic descriptions of the music tonight. And we heard a really great little vaporwave tune before that as well.
We heard it from, I can't even look at you. Like, I'm just feeling sick. It was from Comtruz, which is funny because can you guess who it's based off? Comtruz, he's kind of like a synth pop electronic vaporwave producer, kind of been quite big on the scene when vaporwave really hit off about in 2012, 2013. But he's still releasing some 80s cool bangers.
Remind me what vaporwave is.
Vaporwave, it's kind of a bit of a weird joke musical trend that like emerged from this. I think it's one of those like Tumblr cultures that just erupted, and it's very much rooted in that nostalgic 80s synth pop sound. It's also really to do with, I don't know, like neon aesthetics. It's just a bit of a Tumblr movement that actually kind of formed this weird congregate of different artists like Comtruz. I think Crystal Castles were even incorporated in it to some extent. It was like an underground internet meme musical scene that was a bit of a joke and people didn't really know what to do with it. But some of the artists have since like branched off, either gone in a more synth poppy direction or have kind of moved towards more ambient like music. There's a number of Japanese and actually in the Asian region as well, a number of producers who still produce vaporwave ambient music. But it's kind of weird because it's something that began as an internet trend and almost left as a fad in the end.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, we
I've
won't
just
hear
got it. I've got it. I've got a history lesson for you. Yeah. So, welcome to Vaporwave 0.01.
Mm-hmm.
But no, we won't be listening to any more of that.
Yeah, let's turn it off. RuPaul's Drag Race. Oh my gosh, we are getting closer and closer to the finale. I can taste it.
Mm, it tastes good, but I did just. I have anything I need in Tic Tac. but yeah, it's episode 8 that has since aired. Episode 9 is coming up tomorrow. So if you want a bit of a recap on what has happened, this is Jack and Jake's RuPaul Revision, season 9, episode 8.
Oh, wait, I haven't paused the song yet, so I have to do that and then I'll get this thing. So here it is right now. Oh, that's the telephone.
Oh, shit.
I'm nailing it today.
You're sounding so good on the radio.
This is Swish AF. Anyway, review.
Revision. Revision, episode 8, season 9, RuPaul's Drag Race. Hi. I can't even hear myself. Also, these microphones, I think, are, like, really fucking shitty at the moment.
Oh, really? It's just like someone's fucked with them. My ones.
Yeah.
Mine's okay.
Mine's fine.
I wish we had ones that didn't squeak when you moved them.
Yeah. Oh, no, I wish everything squeaked. I just constantly wish I was squeaking.
Where did you get that from?
Sumo salad.
Yum. Oh my god, that's a thick burrito.
Mm-mm. It's a bit different than the normal one.
It's like more sauces in there, or?
I think so.
Yeah.
It tastes quite nice.
Normally I'll have a vegetarian option. Oh my god.
Oh my god. What's the episode again? Episode of the roast.
Episode 8, the roast.
Yeah.
Funnily, you've like timed it well by eating your chicken. Do you want to do that while we're just doing the thing?
Oh, well, it's warm.
Yeah, do it.
Okay.
Just well, take it out I'll of that thing. Why is it rustling so much? It's so much noise, so much background noise.
I can put it down. Okay. Sorry.
RuPaul's Drag Race.
Fuck, I haven't even recorded the episode yet.
Season 9.
Yeah, the RuPaul roast episode. Go back to season 5. Jinx Monsoon, Alaska Thunder Fun, Detox I Can, and Roxy Andrews, all on the dance floor.
Why are we going back to that?
Because that was the original RuPaul roast.
Oh, right.
They had a roast in season 5, and so that was actually roasting RuPaul. Roasting kind of meaning you have sort of like the victim within the panel, and then you have to say just shit about them, but in a cunty way. Like, cunty, not like you're a cunt, but like, cunty, like, this is funny, this is tongue-in-cheek. And the first one was RuPaul back in season 5, but this time round, in season 9, they're roasting Michelle Visage.
I've challenged our queens to roast Michelle Visage.
What? And I love how they did the reveal too, because RuPaul obviously went into the workroom, did his regular thing and talks about the challenge that's happening. And was this week a maxi challenge? The roast? Was that a maxi?
That was. Yeah. I think it was a maxi pad. Was there a mini challenge?
I can't remember. I feel like there wasn't. Let me Google it.
Yeah. Well, they have a bite.
RuPaul's Drag Race Season 9. I love autofill. Wikipedia, the source of all things true.
It's been, like, so busy at the studio today. I haven't even been able to record anything. So, like, people fucking suck.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Oh my god, what is this? Wow. Oh cool, this is like a big blow-by-blow. We should just use this every time.
Yeah.
Guest judge, alternating judge, main challenge, create, write, and star in their own TV pilots. No.
That hasn't been
yet. Oh, that's next. Oh my god, fun.
Yeah,
that's
that
next
sounds
week.
Good.
So this week, the mini challenge was reading is fundamental, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because in the great tradition of Paris is Burning, it's time for the reading challenge. Because reading is what?
Fundamental.
That's like the best mini challenge
that
of all the
season.
That is
a mini challenge. I love that challenge.
It's Valentina did a really good job. She was really shady, and there's something about her that just really turns me on.
Valentina was the winner of the mini challenge. So the reading is fundamental, obviously a fundamental part of drag history, or history, as one would say. And reading essentially where you get up, you put on your shades, and then you spill some tea about all the other queens in the room, about how bad they are, but saying it in a funny way so that they can kind of all laugh.
Shay Shay Coulee, you sure are a scene stealer. I guess gnawing on set pieces explains those teeth.
It's taking something that everyone knows that they're either shit at or that they're a little bit worse at than you, and picking fun of it, but trying to do it in a lighthearted way. Something that happened, though, in that reading challenge was that 3 or 4 of the queens constantly read Alexis Michelle for her weight and for her body image, and then I think that really got into her. And
what I've struggled with. That's why it was a little bit hurtful.
So you feel like it's okay for you to make fun of someone else, but not someone else to make fun of you?
Interesting, because there's just been a number of queens, and I don't necessarily think I would kind of classify Alexis Michelle as plus size, but we've had throughout the course of the entire program a number of quite, like, queens that are quite big. I'm just thinking, like, Jiggly Caliente and Latrice Royale is two. They are very much... Darian Lake.
Eureka.
Wow, we've got...
I love the
like
big
that.
Queens. I think they're always way more funny. I'm so about them.
But the thing that I really loved about all of those queens, actually, is that they really embraced their size. Mm. And they kind of not really make it part of their act, but it's something that does not really confine them. But it also is something that they will exhibit as part of their demeanor. That's probably a really shitty explanation of it. But Latrice Royale was very big. And she was, like, large and in charge, chunky yet funky, bold and beautiful, baby. And if anyone were to read her for her size, she'd kind of take it with a grain of salt and be like, is that the best you got, bitch? But I think Alexis Michelle, what it seems to me is that maybe they were having a lot of conversations about it in the workroom. Maybe Alexis had brought up that it was an issue for her. I think that they might have been talking about it in jest, and maybe even they'd thrown a couple of jokes her way or something like that. But when it was bombarded in one kind of blow for her, she just couldn't take it. And I think that she needs to get the fuck over that.
Welcome to the 2nd annual RuPaul's Roast. This year,
so if we actually do get to the roast, they all do kind instead of their individual of RuPaul, performance, individual roasting of Michelle roast Visage. Tasha Velour did a good job.
I love it when Ru comes over in the workroom and just tries to get an idea of what they're all going to be saying and how they're going with the challenge. And Sasha was one of the ones that I think they were alluding to the fact she'd probably have some issues with it. She presents herself as an intellectual queen and finds it really difficult to do comedy.
Yeah.
She is kind of has that more dry humour and then really spun that into her character and made
leader character as well. And Ross Matthews came in as well to check in on the Queens, and he gave some really good pieces of advice.
He
like
did,
Farrah
yeah.
Moan, who was really struggling with it, being Farrah, being like, Ross Matthews gave her some really good advice in terms of prefacing something with, I hate to...
it's like, people... oh, I love you, but yeah. you're a fucking idiot.
Yeah, but you're a stupid dumb hoe.
Now that Michelle's dick breath has stunk up this entire stage, I'd like to introduce our next minty contestant, Peppermint.
Peppermint actually ended up winning this roast. Mm. I think that, you know, she did a good job, and maybe they're kind of trying to carry her on, so they gave
don't
her a win.
Don't think she deserved a win.
Don't think she's going to go too much further in the competition.
No.
And then you get to the bottom two, and it is Farrah Moan, and it's also...
Alexis Michelle.
I just have to take a deep breath and focus, because this is it.
Good luck, and don't fuck it up.
So the lip sync comes on. It's some song that I can't remember.
Dolly Parton.
Dolly Parton, that's right. Who? Dolly. And the lip sync was not too bad. I think Farrah kept up her game as well. Alexis Michelle kind of took the sticky vibe and it won the judges over. So it was Farrah that ends up going home.
Alexis Michelle, Shantae, you stay.
So it was Farrah that ends up going home. And watching Untucked as well made me realize how much I actually really like her. I think
she's
actually a real sweetheart, and she's really young, and that's like she's like a year younger than I am. But I think that she is really genuine and that she did everything to the best of her ability. But unfortunately, it's just not... She just doesn't have a lot of ability.
She definitely, I will agree with you in that she doesn't maybe have a varied ability, but she is good at what she does. She's a Vegas showgirl, and she does that super well. And as you said there too, that's her personality. She played herself up so well, and her outfits were glorious, like beautiful to a T.
Gorgeous queen.
This has been Gay Panic, RuPaul's Revision. You're on 2SCR.
Bingo.
Bingo, bango, boingo. What an episode that was. So much fun. I was gagging for some of the girls' outfits too. I don't think we got to mention there, but Shea Coulee is looking more and more like Naomi Campbell and slaying everything that she wears. Also, shout-outs to Sasha Velour. I think her outfit was on point, and to her character as well.
Yeah, she is one that continues to impress. Looking forward to the next episode, which in fact comes out tomorrow. And just to keep in the style of Drag Race for a little bit, if you've watched the program, you might recognize this track. This is actually Aja in Untucked, having a go at Valentina for being completely praised by the judges week in, week out. Someone's remixed what she was saying to Valentina in the Untucked room. It's hysterical.
And just called it basically Linda Evangelista featuring Aja. You're on 2SCR.
107.3.
You're a model. Everything about you is perfect. Did you stone those nights? Oh, you're smiling. Valentina, your smile is beautiful.
I'm not gonna say nothing.
You're a model.
Every single time. They eat her up.
every single time. They eat her up. 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 She doesn't even. She can walk out there in a diaper. Things like
you're perfect, you're beautiful, you look like Linda Evangelista, you're a model, everything about you is perfect. Did you stone those tights? Oh, you're smiling. You look like Linda Evangelista. You look like Linda Evangelista.
This year's Sydney Writers' Festival is bursting with talent, including some of the literary world's brightest and most respected names. Festival guests include great Irish novelist Anne Enright, 2017 Pulitzer Prize winner Colson Whitehead, New York Times best-selling author Roxane Gay, acclaimed author George Saunders, and Pulitzer Prize winning writer Susan Faludi. May 22 to 28, info at swf.org.au. Sydney Writers' Festival, sponsors of 2SER 107.3.
No matter how big or small the occasion, Crust Pyrmont is your go-to pizza store in the Sydney CBD for office catering. Crust Pyrmont can deliver from 1 to 150 pizzas per order, using the best equipment to make sure your gourmet pizzas are delivered fresh, hot and on time. Choose between ordering online through the Crust Pizza app or simply call the store on 9566 1933. Crust Pizza Pyrmont proudly sponsors 2SER 107.3.
I am Jade Jolie. I am 25 years old. Honey, I'm serving up fish, tuna on a platter.
Gay Panic, serving up executive realness.
I feel like we need to be sponsored by RuPaul's Drag Race by this point. If you didn't recognize that voice, Jade Jolie, one of the contestants of RuPaul's Drag Race, one of the most fishy contestants I think that show has had in its 9 seasons now.
I think you could look back at that season and think that there have been other fishy queens who have come through and probably like a bit more fishy than Jade Jolie. I don't know. I feel like April Carrion was gorgeous.
I don't think she was fishy, though. I think she was feminine. And I am drawing a separation between those two things. Feminine as appearing as a woman and fishy as being a very feminine gay man.
Right. Okay. Well, I guess that's your take on it, and we'll have to leave it at that. You're listening to Gay Panic here on 2SER 107.3 with Jack and Jake.
Now, Nevo Zizin is finishing their university degree volunteering for an LGBTIQPCA organization and has just released their first memoir. Oh, and they're 21.
From Melbourne, Nevo's book takes an intimate look into the life of a young woman coming to terms with her trans identity and ultimately finding solace in a thriving queer community as a non-gender binary trans man.
Throughout this cathartic and at times traumatizing process, Nevo takes us on a journey where they're faced with toxic masculinity, male privilege, and acknowledging that the platforms that have been carved by the trans people since past.
Andrew Popel of Final Draft on 2SER sat down with Nevor to talk their memoir, aptly titled Finding Nevor.
Well, firstly, it is a memoir about gender transition and sexuality. However, I think it's also just much more broadly than that, a memoir about the human condition in a way that everyone can relate to. I mean, I talk about body image and family and growing up and going to school and the sort of difficulties that one encounters. So what I want people to know is it's an important read in understanding gender and understanding gender transition, but it's also important for anyone who has never navigated those topics before. I want them to be able to find themselves in the story regardless of gender transition.
Yeah. Now, you're 21. You haven't had any birthdays since writing the book?
No.
21. No, great. You're 21 and you begin your story noting the irony of telling a life at 21, and you close reflecting on the difficulty of stopping a story that's for you, it's continuing every day. And you're right, this isn't something most 21-year-olds find themselves doing. What moved you to put pen to paper?
I just wasn't seeing myself being represented in the ways that I needed, and as a kid, particularly when I first discovered that I was transgender, I needed a role model and I needed a future. I didn't know what my future could be. So I suppose I wanted to pay homage to the elders past and present who have, you know, sort of paved the road for me to be able to write this and to actually use those privileges and platforms to write something for future generations so they have some sort of, not guidebook, but like support, you know, because it feels really lonely out there a lot.
At the beginning of chapter two, you note that the following parts may seem disjointed. People think about writing a story, you know, a story starts, it's got middle and it has an end. And that's what a life feels like too a lot of the time. Mm. But your introduction, you're quite scattershot of details that you want people to know before settling into a more linear telling. But how did you go about structuring and editing vignettes that would resonate both for you and for your readers? Did you have a sense of readership in mind?
I did, yeah. I mean, I would sort of go between the people who really know about this topic and, you know, sort of queer people my age and then young people and then the people who have no idea about any of it. So it's quite a broad demographic and I wanted to be accessible to all of those people at once. And I did have issues because I'm an academic and that's the kind of language that I use a lot. I did have issues with sort of over-intellectualizing my language and not getting to the sort of emotional grit of it. And my editor would have to just be like, look, this is great, really interesting, but what were you feeling? What were you going through? And that was scarier for me, obviously. You know, like I can do the like fluffy words, but what I was actually going through, I had to relive that in order to write that. So the way I actually structured the book upon first draft was in little paragraphs that were disjointed with little topics. So like, you know, year 11 or coming out or whatever, they were smaller paragraphs. And we were initially going to have it as sort of a list kind of book. And then that changed and evolved through editing and through time. But yeah, that chapter two is still kind of left in that version, because I guess as much as our lives are linear, they're also really not, you know, like we go around in circles and we go around the bend and every time we go around, we're a little bit stronger, but we repeat patterns all the time. And I wanted to sort of show snapshots into different parts of my life that weren't necessarily so linear, but rather thematic just in that point, just to gauge an understanding of who I am.
Yeah. Was there anything that was too raw to make the page? And I guess I'm asking you something that if it was, you might not be able to answer.
I really needed to be authentic to all these different incarnations of myself. So in order to do that, I actually had to go back and be them again. And that was really confronting. So I didn't just write, I researched myself in that time and really tried to put myself back into that person and get those thoughts back and actually ask myself how I was feeling. Because when I was writing from the perspective of Navor, the 19, 20, 21-year-old, it was too retrospective and it was too like, this is what I was doing, but actually I should have been, you know, and I had to just be like, that's not even true. Like, you're actually lying about that person. You need to be that person again. So it was really cathartic to do that, but it was also really painful and re-traumatizing. And I often say, you know, it's very hard to tell stories that you'd rather forget. So most of it, if not all of it, made it on the page. And a lot of the things that I didn't want to include eventually came out anyway because they were important for the story.
So notions of community are reflected heavily throughout the story. The support that you find in the LGBTQIA+ community, your Jewish community, can you reflect for me just a little bit though on what role a community plays in a personal journey such as yours?
You know, I think that we live in a society that really profits off our individualism and just being our own efficient product, and it doesn't work well for the system when you band together and show each other a lot of love and, you know, like you're supposed to just have your head down and be there for yourself. So I could not have survived without community for sure, and there are many people who haven't, and I think that it's a really natural inclination to want to belong and to feel loved and supported. So, you know, throughout my life that has always been a consistent need and desire of mine, and it's my focus is creating community, being there for community, whether it's queer or Jewish or whatever. I think every kid really needs to feel supported and not be in systems that, you know, pin them against each other. And we're all experiencing, like, our experiences in life are so similar one from the other, and yeah, they're different, but we can all relate on various levels and various axes, and I think that that's really crucial.
Throughout Finding Never, you reflect on your struggle to understand and have a healthy relationship with your body, Much of this is conditioned by the roles and preconceptions that society brings to bear daily on all of us. So with the benefit of distance, do you see any evolution for better or maybe even for worse in these conceptions of gender and sexuality?
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's interesting because I think that we're coexisting at the moment with an apocalyptic kind of political landscape while also a revolution. And I think these things are actually going to meet at an intersection at one point and battle it out, and one will win. And I think it's going to be the right side that wins. I'm seeing a change
all
the time.
Would it be fair to say the right side is the left side here?
Just yes. Yeah. For sure. Yeah, don't get that wrong. Yeah, I think that we really are sitting on the cusp of a queer and trans revolution. I say it all the time. I can see things changing. I mean, within the queer community, our politics are shifting and changing all the time. The debates that we're having, it's just mind-boggling and fascinating. But outside of that bubble, there's so much changing as well. I mean, when I came out in 2013, there was nothing about transgender in the mainstream whatsoever. And then Time Out named 2014 as the transgender tipping point. And since then, we have just seen such a variety of diversity and representation and, yeah, problematic in a lot of ways. But I think going on Channel 7 yesterday really showed me that the world can change because it's such a mainstream program, and they were so open to me, you know, contributing to the script and talking about the language that I wanted used, and that gave me so much hope. And I just felt like now more than ever we have hope for the future.
And so you were given the advice to stop trying to be a man by I think it's probably the first trans man mm-hmm. that you really got to know through the story. And he was basically telling you that you were already your own man, and that was special. You didn't need to perform some version of masculinity. How much do we actually suffer, do you think, under these notions of there's a performative way of being, there's a way you have to be?
To a debilitating extent. I think that we really underestimate how much it indoctrinates us on a really implicit and covert level that we can't even really pick up on. And it's funny because I see it mostly from the people who are violently transphobic. I just look at them and I think, oh my gosh, you are the ones that are the most oppressed by this, because they see you who is performing masculinity or embracing masculinity in a totally different way, and they're just like, hey, I've spent my whole life conforming to these standards, like everyone told me. If you're also a man, what does that make me? And it's just like, well, if your gender is so dependent on someone else's expression, like, that's really scary and it sounds really fragile. So I think that it really does indoctrinate us. I think that we're told to man up so much throughout our life. I've never met any man that hasn't been told that they're not man enough. I've never met any woman that hasn't been told she's too emotional or that's unladylike or some sort of standard that is just unreachable. And I think we need to start to unpack that and ask ourselves, what does it actually mean to be a man or a woman? What does that mean for you? And is the way that you express your manhood or your masculinity, is it the same as other men? Because I've never met two men that express their gender in the same way.
So tell me what you learned about male privilege as you transitioned.
Ah, so interesting. I mean, it's interesting because I get male privilege to a certain extent as someone who is cis male passing, which cisgender means, you know, assigned a gender at birth that you identify with for your life. So I get that privilege because I pass as a man, but once people discover I'm transgender, that privilege does kind of dissipate in certain ways. So it is really interesting. I guess, like, as someone who presents as a man as compared to presenting as a woman, I get heaps more space to speak. I'm not talked over as much as I used to be. I'm laughed at. Like, I'm actually funny now. People did not laugh at my jokes beforehand, which was just mean because I think I was always funny. I also get asked to help out a lot more with my strength. Now, when I was presenting as a woman, I was going to the gym all the time and I was super buff, and now I am very weak and fragile and dainty. So I used to get so frustrated when people would be like, all right, we need two men to help us move a table. And I was like, are you serious? I'm stronger than any of the boys here. And now I'm like, I'm not stronger than any of the women here. You know, that is so not the situation. Yeah, I guess I'm privy to the sort of misogynistic language that I wasn't before. Like, men who think that I'm not queer or that I'm not trans will just talk about women in a way that I never heard people talk about so directly before, which is, you know, sort of a treat because it means I get to shut them down hard, which I don't always get the opportunity to do because people know me. But it also means that I'm subject to that kind of conversation, which I don't want to be. Also just like walking home alone at night, like I just feel way safer now than I used to. I don't have to look over my shoulder as much. And I actually have to be aware of how the women walking in front of me feel.
Yeah.
Because I realize that they look over their shoulder at me. So it's just like, it's a really strange shift of perspective. And I just have to constantly be on it of, you know, how am I presenting? What are people reading of me? How do I still show my softness and my sensitivity now that I'm being read as a man?
So in the book, you discuss in detail your process of deciding to take testosterone and then enduring medical scrutiny, the clinical processes involved. Your reflections are, if I can say, harrowing. And at times you seem to question the medical rationales in competition with your own, you know, fragile mental health at the time, what you were going through versus really this very clinical perspective that they were applying. Mm. In hindsight, how do you feel about the way the process is conducted?
I think I was really lucky in a lot of ways because I was financially privileged enough to actually see a gender psychiatrist without having to wait for 8 months or longer. I think, you know, my process was relatively easy as compared to other people. I also didn't have any real pre-existing mental illness aside from depression and anxiety that would have gotten in the way of that. And I think it's really hard for people with BPD or various other mental illnesses to actually be taken seriously. And, you know, just because you have a pre-existing mental illness doesn't mean that you're not authentically transgender. What does that even mean? And the idea of cisgender people deciding who is authentically trans is like really problematic in a lot of ways. So I think the process is fraught. I think there are gender psychiatrists doing the right thing at this point in time. I think a lot needs to change. My experience was a lot better than a lot of my friends. I mean, how are we supposed to really trust psychologists when homosexuality was classified in the DSM not that long ago?
So is that something that can effectively be changed from within the system, or are we seeing it suffering because it is still, I guess, something that's in its infancy? Realistically, when we think about I hesitate to use the word, but like economies of scale here, when there is more acceptance, there will be more people and you have maybe better people.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully we'll just have more queers in psychology. Like, I want actual trans people to be the ones deciding whether I can take testosterone or not. I want people who actually understand. I really don't care how many years you've studied transgender. You don't get it, you know? And that's the reality, is that if you haven't lived it, you really can't understand it. And, you know, your qualifications are great, but there is going to be a big dissonance. So that's what I want to see. I want to see actual queer people in positions of power who can help other queer people. And also there's just this mentality about transgender regret, which is like less than 1% of the population of transgender people actually regret their transitions. But also, why aren't we allowed to regret things? I mean, everyone else in society is allowed to regret the stupid tattoos they got or the person that they slept with they can't believe. You know, like, everyone's allowed to regret. Why aren't we allowed to regret things? I just don't understand that.
As you go over this, as you reflect, as you do on society, the places that it does or often fails to find for non-cis, non-white, non-straight people, do you find you're left with hope?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really lucky. I live in Melbourne. I live in a thriving, brilliant queer community. We have so much going on. I am surrounded by some of the most inspirational people I think I will ever meet in my life that are changing the world. Like, I wake up and I go to an event and I am just surrounded by badass queers changing the total social climate. And this is the thing, like, I am just one person in a sea of incredible queers, you know, like, this is not just me, this is a triumph for our community, and so many people are doing such phenomenal things. So I do really have hope. I have a lot of hope. I'm not sure if society on a wider scale will change in the direction exactly that we want it to in my lifetime, but that's not necessarily what I'm working towards. I'm not working towards an idealistic world for me. I'm working towards it for the future and for my kids and my grandkids and queer kids 100 years down the track. Obviously, I would like things to change right now, but whether that's realistic or not is another thing. It's just about, you know, getting out there, educating, doing my very best, trying to be the best person that I can be, and also pulling back and protecting myself when I need to.
Sydney Film Festival is now on sale. There's over 350 screenings of 288 films from 62 countries over 12 days in 10 venues. From the magnificent State Theatre in the city to the Ritz Cinema in Randwick, there's bound to be a film and venue just right for you. It all happens from June 7 to 18, and you can buy your flexi passes or single tickets right now at sff.org.au. Sydney Film Festival, proudly sponsoring 2SER 107.3.
Gay Panic Radio on 2SER or we'll beat the shit out of you. Outside, how about that?
It's true though, we have actually hired security to bash
security.
The shit out of everyone who doesn't listen to Gay Panic. So pretty much most of the people in Sydney will be bashed.
Yes, and most of the people who aren't listening and they don't know it yet, but that's the thing I love about it, the element of surprise.
I know, like you never know when you're going to get absolutely physically abused.
oh my gosh.
Just such a fun little thing.
But I wonder what's happening to that girl now. So if anyone isn't actually familiar with that clip, that is the Cash Me Outside girl who appeared on Dr. Phil. I'm thinking it was like September last year, and she kind of blew up, not physically, like she blew up virally and went back onto Dr. Phil to tell him the only reason that he was popular in more recent years was because of her, which, hey, like, I actually think there's some legitimacy to that as well.
Oh,
it's
absolutely.
So interesting to see how these viral sensations will just, you know, absolutely blow up, not physically again, but they will just become so big and then you never really hear of them again. And on that note, Joanne, the scammer, of whom you might be familiar with, if you listen to this program, a couple of our little promo things have her voice included. She's actually appeared as part of a YouTube doco that's like 19 minutes, 20 minutes by Super Deluxe, which is just a YouTube account. And it's about Joanne the Scammer going to Britain to perform in kind of like a club environment to do like a live show. And if you're a fan or familiar, Brandon, who does Joanne the Scammer in the video, in kind of his very, you know, just vulnerable, not in character, he's incredibly timid. He's really quite quiet and shy and reclusive, which I find quite interesting because his exterior character, that is Joanne the Scammer, is just ridiculous and just is absolutely hysterical and spot on when it comes to, I guess, that like internet age humor. But it's really interesting to see behind the scenes how Brandon, aka Joanne, is just someone completely different.
And if you haven't seen any of Joanne the Scammer's clips, jump online and check them out while you're up there as well. Go on to ser.com. I was going to say /gaypanic, but it's not that address anymore. We've updated our website.
Yeah, everything's looking absolutely fresh. So what you can do, if you want to listen back to any of the chats from tonight, thank you to Andrew Popel. You can also catch Final Draft tomorrow morning, Saturday mornings on 2SER from 11, I believe.
10.
10.
I want to say
10 o'clock in the morning. Hope you have a good one.
I just want to argue with you. It could definitely be at 11, but
I'm not
who knows.
Sure what you're doing.
But thank you to Patrick, our producer, who has just uploaded all of said
Yay!
Interviews that you can listen to and check out online. We're going to leave you with a tune now from Shabazz Palaces.
30 clip extension, new track from a forthcoming album that I'm looking forward to. Psychedelic hip hop outfit.
Stick around for Hardcore Classic. Those guys bring you the dopest tunes.
Yeah.
In the world.
Yeah.
Well,
in
yeah,
the
world.
World.
I'm going to say world.
In the Milky Way and the Andromeda galaxies.
We'll catch you next Friday from 7 p.m.
Bye. Have a good weekend.
Secret plans. Favorite rapper. Prayed on by his adorning fans.
Your favorite rapper.
Wheezing through his adornments, man.
Your favorite rapper.
A mansion amazing with implausible adjoinments.
Your favorite rapper.
He's flossing in a peripheral sanity.
Your favorite rapper.
He's a chauvinist with feminine vanity.
Your favorite rapper.
He's puffing out his tattoo chest.
Man, look at your favorite rapper.
He's towering his arrogance.
Man, look at your favorite rapper.
Monetizing intelligence.
Your favorite rapper.
All while narrowing our elements.
Your favorite rapper.
Parodying our sufferings.
Your favorite rapper.
All for pittance like a pence, some bitch shit.
So that's your favorite rapper.
And he's the best.
You can't say that to me. I don't play that. I'm free. My thoughts think for themselves.
Nah, you can't say that to me. I don't play that, I'm G. My thoughts think for themselves.
2017. Computers. Processors. Motion sensors. Drone vendors.
I am floating towards
no splendors.
There are too many
rich pretenders.
Signing my life on
high cost lenders.
I'm pushing my pulse up
gender bending.
2064. Stolen by armies
defenders.
Your feast has ended.
Aggressors.
No pigs in paradise.
Transgressions.